cigarette smoke. There's a butt can kind of beyond the bike rack, so just make sure you put your cigarette butts in the butt can. If you need the bathrooms, they're right across the foyer up a small flight of stairs. Hopefully everyone can get situated and not have to do a lot of moving around during the meeting so that we can fully enjoy our speaker, Buster, who has come all the way out here from Suffolk. Make sure that you've silenced your cell phones. If you haven't done so, please take a quick peek. And this group does practice the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. And it's the purpose of this meeting to carry a clear message of recovery and focus precisely on how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on AA Simple Actions. At this time, I've asked a friend to read the AA preamble.
Good evening. My name is Lygia, and I'm an alcoholic. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Thank you.
All right, and normally this format is an open big book discussion meeting, so if you come back next Monday, we'll be back in the book on step one. But tonight is a very special night. We have a speaker who is here to share his experience, strength, and hope in recovery. So at this time, I'd like to give a warm, warm welcome to Buster from Suffolk.
I had to see if the knees were working. Isn't it amazing? I'm still astounded at what happens in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, there's something in these rooms that just overwhelmed me when I come here, you know. And you know, my sponsor used to say, it's an island of sanity and we're all gone mad. And old Arthur talks about it in Suffolk, that he always feels better when he leaves a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Buster Hawkins and I'm an alcoholic. Had my last drink April 19th, 1992, sitting on the toilet in the bathroom of my mother's house. All the Miller High Life was gone, all the Smirnoff was gone, all the Wild Irish Rose was gone. All I had left was what was left of a bottle of NyQuil, about 20% alcohol. And I drank it because I wanted that alcohol to do for me in that cold medicine what all that beer, liquor, and wine had done for me in the past, and that just made me feel different. To see the world different, see me different, because I learned when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that alcohol was a problem, but the root of my problem was selfishness and self-centeredness. You know, and I understand that today because it can still be a problem for me. You know, my home group is the Suffolk Discussion Meeting. We meet at 213 North Main Street in Suffolk. That's St. Paul's Episcopal Church. We meet in the Fellowship Hall. We are an open discussion meeting. We don't believe you need to declare yourself an alcoholic to come in and sit down and hear what we have to say. Because a lot of people come in don't understand what alcoholism is. You know, and when they sit there, we try to help them understand what alcoholism is and that there is a planned program of recovery from alcoholism. You know, and Bill says in the fifth tradition in the 12 and 12 that our legacies of suffering and recovery, which are easily passed on to another alcoholic, is a gift from God. You know. And I've got to remember that. And we do our best to practice the fifth tradition. You know, I say often that I'm sober by the grace of a loving God. And I stay sober. And this is important to me. I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to be a part of this deal, trying to do what's suggested and what's asked of me. And that's important. Such as be here tonight to share with you how the 12 steps, good sponsorship, a great home group, The love and hope is in these rooms, and a power greater than me got me through that hopeless state of mind and body that I stumbled in here with some time ago. I'm grateful for that. You know, and I say that I'm grateful for sponsorship, you know, because when I came here, you know, I'd hear things like, you know, Buster, don't be judgmental, but stick with the winners. Okay, how do you find out about that? You know, no major decisions the first year. And then everybody said, well, you got to change people, places, and things. You know. Don't compare, but identify. You know. But here's one that really rattled me, and it rolled it around in my head a lot, and that is, and Buster, this is an honest program. To thine own self be true. And I'm leaving a meeting on Friday night, and I go get in my brother's car because I didn't have a driver's license, and he was taking me to the meeting. And somebody taps me on the shoulder and says, Buster, don't forget, fake it till you make it. You know, to thine own self. So I was really confused. I needed some help. I needed a sponsor. You know, and I had a wonderful sponsor. My first sponsor was Tom Hearn, and I'll talk about him a little bit later, but Tom helped me understand, you know, about this deal. And Tom was my sponsor until he died. And I got a sponsor today who has a sponsor. But Tom was my sponsor until he died. And Tom died with 27 years sobriety. And his sponsor was a guy by the name of Earl Felton. And Earl died with over 50 years sobriety. And Earl's sponsor was a guy by the name of Sumner Pugh. And Sumner's sponsor was our co-founder, Bill Wilson. One alcoholic talking to another. That's the deal. It's been called the greatest phenomenon of ideas of the 20th century. It's all based on one alcoholic talking to another, you know. And I'm so grateful for Tom. I thank God every morning for Tom and Hilda, because they helped me understand about Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholism and the planned program of recovery. And Hilda was a black belt Al-Anon, and I got a chance to be in the back of that Cadillac of Tom's and hear those AA Al-Anon clearing the air conversations. And Hilda always said that she gave Tom the right to his wrong opinion. But I learned that Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon working together, families who get sick together get well together. You know, and I'm grateful to have that opportunity. You know, I say that alcohol has been a part of my life as far back as I remember. You know, my daddy was a good man. He really was a good man. Didn't have much of an education, but he worked hard. He was a good man, but he drank. And when daddy drank, daddy was different. You know, and there was a lot of chaos that would come to the house when daddy was drinking. A lot of anxiety and fear would come to the house when daddy was drinking. And I made a decision early on in life. I made a decision that I would never drink alcohol. Major decision in my life. I would never drink alcohol. You know, and I stuck by that. Because I saw what it would happen. What would happen. And I go knock on the door. Daddy drank in the bathroom, sitting on the toilet. And I had my last drink sitting on the toilet. But Daddy was sitting in the bathroom, and drink Budweiser and keep it hidden underneath the bathroom sink. And I knock on the door and I said, Daddy, please come out. Son, leave me alone. I'm hurting nobody but myself. Leave me alone. I'm hurting nobody but myself. And I thought to myself, how dare you? Mama's crying. My sister's crying. Buddy's getting ready to have an asthma attack because he's so upset. You know, don't you see what you're doing? And years later, when I was in the grasp of my alcoholism, I came home because I needed a drink. I came home from work. And I'm walking through my living room, going to the bathroom, took my clothes off, had my underwear on, and had my briefcase. Now, in my underwear, briefcase, going to the bathroom. My stepson grabs me by the shoulder and says, Buster, don't you see what you're doing to Mama and to John and to me? And I told him the most selfish words ever come out of my mouth. Leave me alone. I'm hurting nobody but myself. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. But in the back of my mind, please love me. That's a terrible place to put family, to put those that care about us. Those who watch us almost kill ourselves from this disease, and some do die from this disease. You know, it's a deadly disease. And where can we go on a night like this and sit here and we can laugh about matters of life and death? You know, because we've been there. And the good thing about it is, for me, is I almost died from this disease. But thank God to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because they brought me out of that hopeless state of mind and body and gave me a planned program of recovery to deal with the alcoholism and more importantly, to deal with me and how I do was life. Yeah. And I left home. I had some success in high school athletics. And I was given an opportunity to play football at East Carolina. I was a little bit bigger then. And a little bit taller. And I left to go to Greenville, North Carolina. And to play football. And they put me in the athletic dorm, and it was always really nice. But during the first couple months, I got my back hurt, and I couldn't continue to stay there without any financial aid. I stayed there that first year. The doctor said, "Buster, if you keep on playing, you'd be liable to get paralyzed," and I certainly didn't want to do that. You know, but I still tried to play. I snuck on, and then the doctor came and got me and got the coach, and they made sure I didn't come back out for practice anymore. So they took me out of the athletic dorm, put me in the freshman dorm. I got up with a group of guys now. These nice guys. They really were nice guys from Carolina. Most of them from North Carolina. And I had the only black and white 13-inch TV on the dorm floor. And we watched Andy Griffith at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Everybody come down there, and they said, "Buster, look," and they like to drink beer on the weekends, and some of them like to drink a little Manischewitz wine and mix it with the beer. And "Buster, come on, go with us. We're going to the Rascala down in Greenville." I said, "Well, I don't drink. I don't drink." "Buster, come on, go with us. It's 3.2 and it won't hurt you." I had a friend from Asheville said, "Busted hell, after 16, it really don't matter." You know? And that is the truth, because I proved that. You go to the bathroom a lot and you do get drunk. Anyhow, I told them, you know, I didn't want to go. They said, "Well, come on." They finally convinced me to go down to the Rascal. It's on a Friday night. And I'm sitting there around the table, and they order a couple pitchers of draft beer, and they get me a mug, you know, cold, frosted mug, and they pour it in there, and I started drinking. And I liked the taste of beer. I realized I liked the taste of beer. You know, and I'd finished that one. They quickly poured me another one. I'm sitting there. And in about 45 minutes, I came to the realization that these guys were smart. You know, I went to class with them, but I was listening to them talk. And the more they talked, the smarter I thought they were, you know. And then they started telling jokes, and my God, I had no idea. These guys are comedians. They're funny, you know, and I started laughing at the jokes. But the main thing that happened in about an hour and 20 minutes, I'm sitting there and I'm looking around. And I could have sworn they put a guard on the door and kept every ugly woman out. Because every woman in there was beautiful. Every woman in there was beautiful, you know. And anyhow, the magic was happening. And somewhere in that time frame, about that time in my life, I made another major decision. I thought to myself, and I liked the way I was feeling, I thought to myself, maybe not everybody drank like my daddy, that maybe I could do this. You know, and I pursued that. I really pursued that. And as you can see, things got worse as time went on. You know, I come from East Carolina, from Greenville. I go back home after that year. And I enrolled at Old Dominion University. It's Old Dominion College at that time. I enrolled, and one of the first things that happened to me when I enrolled was I had a group of guys, friends from the Suffolk, where I went to school, Suffolk High School, come up to me. They were already going to classes there and said, "Buster, come on. We want you to be a member of our fraternity." At that time, it was called the Imps. Appropriately named, by the way. later became KA, Kappa Alpha. And so I did. I joined. And of course, you know what fraternities do on weekends, have combo parties and special events, old side ball, that kind of stuff. And I continued to drink. I drank. They wanted me to drink. We have bathtub gin parties, and they had the bathtub up on top of the bar. And come on, Buster, have something. "No, I don't drink liquor, but I will drink some of the beer." And I drank the beer, and I wouldn't drink the liquor. And I met a young lady, and we got to dating. And after about a year or so, we became engaged. I ended up graduating, and we were going to get married. And as soon as I graduated, we got married. You know, I've been offered a job over at Deep Creek High School to teach and to coach, and that's where I did my student teaching. So they offered me a job there to teach and to coach football, and I turned that down because I'd been working part-time with the city of Suffolk since I was about 9-10 years old. And I was working maintenance and doing a lot of things, taking care of swimming pool, the tennis courts and park maintenance and stuff like that. And I kind of grew up in the department, so the director who had moved there from Georgia had offered me a job as the assistant parks and recreation director, so I turned that down. I turned the teaching position down. I went to work for the city of Suffolk. Life was going to be good. We got married. We had an apartment on Broad Street, you know, soon to get a house on 460. Life was going to be good. Yeah. And I would tell her that being the assistant director, we had all these activities at the Birdsong Recreation Center right there on Main Street in Suffolk. And I had to stay there at night. But by this time, I enjoyed stopping at a place called Floyd's Grill right on 460. And they would have them cold, frosted mugs like that at the Rathskeller in Greenville, North Carolina. And they had the coldest draft beer. And I would sit there, drink a couple, buy a couple to take home, and get in that black $99 recliner, pass out, go to sleep, whatever you want to call it. And that was good living. You know, that was good living. And my work increased. My workload increased, and I continued to work late hours. But my main focus on working late, I used to tell my wife, I'm working hard so that we can have a better life. We can have a better living. But I worked late when I didn't have to work late because I knew that at 9 o'clock, at 9:30, I could leave that office, that center, and stop at Floyd's Grill on Route 460 and have that cold draft beer. You know. My alcoholism was starting to progress, you know, and you know, she and I would go to certain functions and she would drink a little, I would drink a little bit more, and I would drink, she would drink a little and I would drink a lot, you know, that's just the way it went, you know, and time went on. One Saturday night we went to a dance, and I got what my good friend Tommy D used to say, double drunk. I got drunk before dinner. I got drunk after dinner. She drove home, and I was sick. I mean, I passed out in the bed with my clothes on, and next morning I was really feeling bad. And I said, Chrissy, my stomach's upset. I believe the carbonation of that beer, that Pabst Blue Ribbon beer, in the refrigerator would settle my stomach. But the problem was, you know, I was shaking, and I'd always heard if you drink a beer in the morning, take the shakes off, you know. And Bill talks about in his story the progression of the disease that when he was a young stock speculator, you know, his alcohol was exciting and exhilarating. He could sit there and talk about deals and the big high finance deals that he was going to do. And then later on, he said, you know, he'd get up in the morning, he couldn't eat breakfast without that gin. And with that tumblers of beer, and that liquor had ceased to be a luxury, it became a necessity. And at that point, liquor had ceased to be a luxury for me, it became a necessity. I had to have something to drink. And I also drank, as Bill did, for that last part of that progression of disease, I drank for oblivion. When Bill said the stock market went to hell, and so did he, stock market would recover and he wouldn't. You know, I understand to be in that point, you know, to be where he was when I, you know, I'd gone across town, didn't have a driver's license. Wife had dumped all my stuff in the middle of the bedroom. I went all the way across town to the liquor store, you know, and got two pints of vodka, put them in that big brown coat of mine, stopped at the library on the way home, tried to get a couple shots down and take the shakes off, got home, and all my stuff laying in the middle of the bedroom floor, and I got that quilt, and I drank as much of that vodka as I could because I wanted to drink for oblivion. I wanted it to all go away. So I know the progression of disease. I know what it is, and I know what I did. You know, I understand what Bill talks about. Well, she got me the Pabst Blue Ribbon, I drank it. things smooth there for a while. Life continued to go on. Our work continued to increase. She was working for the Social Service Bureau, and we were two incomes coming in, and we were still partying, and we were still doing the things that we do, you know. But my mind got to the point where I was only drinking on weekends, and I started drinking on Mondays, then I started drinking on Tuesdays, and I was drinking all the time. That does not do much for marriage, you know. And as a result of my continued drinking and all the problems it brought to that house, she did what she had to do for herself about me, you know. She sought attention elsewhere, yeah, and that's what happened. She left. So, you know, what do drunks do? And if fishermen fish, golfers golf, drunks drink. I drank, you know. I drank, you know, because here I was, you know, like my life is falling apart. You know, I continued to work, you know, and, you know, the opportunity came to hire somebody to be my assistant. I was actually made the director of Parks and Recreation from assistant to the director. You know, I was able to still function, but it was getting worse. It was getting worse. I got this guy from Botetourt County to come down to Suffolk to be my assistant, and he was a good man. He did a lot of work, and I was grateful to have him. He was a good finance man. He was a good activities man. He understood what we were trying to do, is to bring all the activities to all population of Suffolk, you know. But he watched me, and he knew that I was having a problem by drinking, and it continued to get worse, you know. It continued to get worse, and you know, I started laying out from work, and he come to my desk, and he stepped up beside me, and he said, "Look, you know, the heat's on." You know, he said, the city manager, you know, is concerned, and I kind of brushed it off, and continued to do what I do. I started laying out work some more, you know, and then I got to the point where I got sick. I got very sick. You know, this is the type of alcoholic I am, the type of alcoholic thinking that I have. I gave up the beer because it bloated me and it didn't get the job done quick enough. So I started drinking vodka, and I have 2 half gallons, you know, in the house at all times. And this is the kind of alcoholic I am. You know, I get up in the middle of the night in my underwear, take the 2 half gallons are empty, to put them in the trash, because if I died that night, I didn't want everybody to know how much I drank. That's alcoholic thinking. I mean, and I got sick. I got real sick. I turned as orange as this shirt right here. You know, my skin, my eyes, my urine had a terrible odor. It was thick like honey. You know, I was sick. I could hardly walk. You know, I could hardly make it to the bathroom. And I'd had that vodka in the kitchen. And I struggled to get to the kitchen because I had the shakes. I couldn't stop shaking. You know, there are a lot of people that know what I'm talking about. Dr. Silkworth, that phenomenal craving. When I put alcohol in my body, I can't let it go, and I could not let it go. And I was sick. And I'd hold on to the wall, and I'd get into the kitchen, and I'd get that vodka, and I'd get the orange juice. And I put a straw in a glass, because I got to the point where I couldn't stop shaking. And I dropped the glass on the floor, and I'd be walking around on the glass, and my feet were bloody. The bottom of my feet were bloody. You know, and but I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. You know, and you know, I get to sitting on that sofa, and I finally get one in me. Sometimes I throw it back up and grab it and try to keep it back down. But, you know, and the people here know what I'm talking about with that too. You know, because I could not function without alcohol. I could not live without alcohol. And I know I was dying. I tell myself out loud when I struggle to the bathroom and I try to go to the bathroom. I tell myself out loud, I know I'm killing myself. I know I'm killing myself, but I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. There came a knock on the door one Tuesday morning, and the lady behind the door was crying. And it was a lady I worked with. She said, "Buster, please open the door." And I struggled to the door, feet still bloody. I opened the door, and she was standing there with a policeman, an undercover policeman, who was a good friend of mine today. And they got me dressed, and they got me in that car, and they took me to the hospital. And I stayed in the hospital for 28 days. And they put me in that little room that does not have a handle on the inside. And I bounced around on them walls, you know, and they said I almost strangled myself with the, you know, the thing they put around you, can't tie it in the front, can't tie it in the back. And I'm running around, I had that thing wrapped around me, and they got the oily in there and got it cut off of me. I almost strangled myself with it. And I stayed in the hospital for 28 days. And I'm sitting on the edge of the bed. The doctor comes. The doctor was a friend of mine. He sat on the edge of the bed. And he said, Buster, you've been a sick person. He said, I'll tell you right now, if you drink again, you're going to die. He said, I can do a biopsy of your liver right now, but if you drink again, you're going to die. I said, Doc, and I called his name. I said, don't worry. I will never drink again. I will never drink again. And I meant it. I certainly meant it. I really did. But I tell you, the fear of dying from alcoholism did not get me sober. Did not get me sober then. The fear of dying from alcoholism today does not keep me sober. The only thing that worked for me is to get to that point of desperation and reach out for help with Alcoholics Anonymous. And y'all worked for me. Y'all helped me to understand the disease of alcoholism and what the plan program of recovery is. I got out of that hospital, and three months later, I was as drunk as I'd ever been in my life. The fear did not keep me sober. You know. I went back to work, and I tried my best to work. You know, and I'd go for periods of time and I wouldn't drink, and I was miserable. I'd drink again and try not to drink, you know, try not to drink. You know, I'm that alcoholic that you know, the sanity for me today is making decisions based on the truth. When I was drinking and I was in the throes of alcoholism, you know, insanity for me was making decisions based on a lie. And I always, always told myself that first lie, I'm only going to drink one. And the second lie I told myself was, it ain't going to be as bad this time. And it was always worse. It was always worse. Yeah. And then I get to, and there's another third lie that I could tell myself too, when it really got bad, it ain't my fault. Today, I try to make decisions based on the truth, and y'all help me do that. I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over people. Situations, I'm just powerless, you know. And I find something in here that works for me to be able to deal with that. And I'm grateful for that. You know, I try my best and I drink. And I was in and out for quite some time. The city manager called me in his office and said, Buster, have you looked in the mirror lately? I said, no. He said, well, the world's crumbling down around your ears. You know. And then he gave me an opportunity to find a job somewhere else. Yeah. He said, I'll help you where I can. I started sending out resumes. And I started making contacts. And I started doing what we do to get another job. And cunning, baffling, and powerful. All the intention in the world going to that interview in Chesterfield, Stafford County. You know, and I get there and I'm drunk. And I hold up in a motel, and come back about 5 days after I was supposed to come. Never went to the interview. You know, I come back home. And I'm still trying to do it. And I show up for work. And then I lay out a few more days and comes a knock on the door. You know, and I look out the door, and there's my assistant standing there with a manila envelope, and he said, the city manager said, there's four letters of resignation in here. You know, he wants you to sign one and give it back to me. And so I looked at him, and I signed the one that said I was going back to school to work on a master's degree in public administration. And I did. And there was a blurb in the paper, a small article in the paper. And they had a quote from the city manager. He said he was mildly surprised at my resignation. Mildly surprised about my resignation. I went back to school. I really enjoyed going to graduate school over here at Old Dominion. I got up with a group of guys, great guys, and we formed a study group. And I had lost that job with the city, and I had gone to work with a furniture company that my father worked for. And I'm grateful for that. I truly am. I started working part-time, and which quickly became full-time. And took me out of the credit office, put me in sales. I had some success in sales. Soon became one of the leading salesmen in the company. And I'm not bragging, I'm just telling the way it was. I was on fire. I didn't want to be drunk again. I wanted to get my life turned around. And I was on fire, you know. I was on fire. And the master's program went well. Like I said, I had these guys that I was studying with. 3 years. I'm going part-time, which is almost full-time. People didn't know what I'm talking about, graduate programs. And working full-time. I'm going to school at night, studying all the time, back and forth and over. You know, and after 3 years, we come up where we're going to do our take our comprehensive exams. And I've been studying ever since I started it. I'd answered every question that had been asked on every comprehensive exam that had been given in public administration. And that's what we do. You know how we are excessive, you know? But I wanted to do it right, and I wanted to do well. And I'd answered every one. And we studied, and we met on that day. And the anxiety level is still up here somewhere. But I sat in there with these guys over there on the campus at the business school, and I took the comprehensive exams. And we wrote, and we wrote, and we wrote. And about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they came to us, and we were done. I felt fair about it. I wasn't overly excited about what I'd done, but I felt okay about what I'd done. Now, I'm getting ready to leave the room to go home, and one of my classmates says, "Buster, come on, go with us to Friar Tuck's across Hampton Boulevard. We're going to have a beer." Now, I've been dry for 3 years. I said, "Okay, I'll go over there with you, and I'll have a beer." I go and I sit down with them. They get those 2 pitchers of draft beer, get them cold draft mugs, pour me one, pour them one. They drank, I drank. They get up and go home. I'm still sitting there, you know. And these guys were funny. They were telling jokes before they left. I realized they were funny. And they were a lot smarter than I were. But what amazed me, after about 1 hour and 20 minutes, I looked around and I could have sworn they put a guard on the door and kept every ugly woman out. The magic was happening again. The magic was happening again. I understand. You know, more trips to the hospital. You know, in this period of time, too, I got up with a doctor, and he was a good doctor. He was a psychiatrist, and he did a lot for me. You know, and I had bounced in and out of the hospital, you know, and he would do what he could to help me. He could sit there and talk. I'd talk with him, he'd talk with me, but he wasn't an alcoholic. And I'm not, believe me, he's a good doctor. But he didn't understand. He thought he understood alcoholism, but he didn't. He could talk, but he wasn't an alcoholic. He gave me medicine, but that wouldn't work either. Because I did what we do, or what I do, and I abused the medicine. Okay. You know, anything that messes my head is going to take me back to alcohol. Anything that messes my head, I don't care if it's cold medicine, I'm real cautious of what I do today. Because anything that messes with this up here, all my junk start up here. Yeah. And anyhow, I'm in the hospital one more time, and I'm laying up in the bed. You know, and I look at him, I said, "Doc, why can't I get sober and stay sober?" He looked at me and said, "Buster, you have not been my greatest therapeutic triumph." Yeah, and I'd gotten married, you know, again, I mean, a wonderful lady. She had 2 children, and they loved me, she loved me, you know. And to tell you how much the children loved me, Chris, my oldest stepson, he, without his mother knowing, or without me knowing, went to a lawyer. He was going to graduate high school. Went to a lawyer on his own and had his last name changed to my last name. So that when they announced his name to get his high school diploma, it would be Chris Hawkins. Yeah. What a compliment. What love. You see what alcohol did. See, that alcoholism took that from me. They did what they had to do for themselves about me. And we talk occasionally, and I've been able to make my amends, thank God, to this program. For all of that, you know, he calls me occasionally. He's a chief of police up in Northern Virginia. I say he got his God is training, patting people down by patting me down, because I used to take bottles in the room. That's just the way it was. Bill writes in A Vision for You, because I kept trying to find a way. He says, there's an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. One more attempt and one more failure. I left them guys. I went home and I tried again to get sober, and I couldn't get sober. I bounced in and out of the hospital again many times, And one trip into the hospital and out, I called a dear friend of mine who's passed on, old Howard, and I talked to him. And Howard knew the difficulties I had, I'd lost a job at that furniture store. I sold cars. I lost that job also. Things were bad. Things were real bad. And a friend of mine who was in the newspapers recently, was recently shot and killed in front of his own furniture store, knew how bad things were for me. And he offered me a job to work at the oldest furniture store in Suffolk. Gave me the key, And he knew I was still drinking. And I was the only person in the store. See, I'd gone from being a manager of a big retail operation with 33 employees, great contract, great stock option, good contract, making good money. And my alcoholism took that from me also. And I finally got a job down at this furniture store. And to tell you how bad it was, the Commonwealth of Virginia had taken my driver's license for 10 years. You see, because they don't like people driving cars through 7-Eleven windows. And I had done that. Three DUIs, two in less than 24 hours, and one of them driving a car in a 7-Eleven window. Now, that's honest to God truth. And the policeman that arrested me was a guy coached in Little League ball. Now, you talk about embarrassment, and talk about hurting him and hurting me, when I found out what had happened. He went home and told his daddy when he arrested me. He said, it wouldn't have hurt me any more if it had been you, Daddy. I'm working for this man who knew how bad things had been for me. His driver's license gone. Wife and stepchildren are gone. House is gone. All them things that leave us, leave me when I drink. It kept getting worse. I didn't have a driver's license at lunchtime. I would call Bobby. Bobby was a taxi driver. Bobby knew my situation too. Bobby would come and meet me in front of the store. I locked the store. I said, Bobby, take me to Woolworths. I go into Woolworths. I go in there and buy a roll of tape. I get back in the taxi cab. We go out to the liquor store and I buy them little small bottles of vodka. Get back in the taxi cab. Go out to the Kentucky Fried Chicken across the road. Go in and drink a couple, take the shakes off, and take the rest of the bottles to my leg. That's not a normal lunch hour. But that's what I did. I had to have alcohol every 20 minutes. That's how bad it had gotten for me. And if there's anybody new here, or anybody here who's thinking about trying that, you haven't finished drinking yet, and you think, masking tape tears. and the bottles fall right out on the sidewalk, on the floor. Electrical tape will stretch. Now, I've walked down the middle of Washington Street on the sidewalk dragging bottles. and that's the honest truth. But I will tell you this. Duct tape works very well. But it'll take every bit of the hair off your leg. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for 3 years before I had any hair on this leg and this leg. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I said a moment ago, I called Howard. I said, Howard, I need help. And Howard was the oldest member of the group that was going to be my home group. I said, Howard, I need help. I need to talk to Tom. I'd heard about Tom Hearn and how he'd gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, Tom was my daddy's supervisor. And my daddy tried to help me get sober, and the doctors, and doing what he could what he could do to help me get sober. And he talked about Tom, and I said, how would I need to talk to Tom? Howard picked me up and took me out to the Ebenezer, out to the meeting on 17 on a Thursday night. I looked for Tom. I said, Tom, I need help. I said, will you be my sponsor? He said, Buster, are you willing to go at any lengths to get sober and stay sober? I said, yes. I had no idea what I was saying yes to. He said, Buster, I want you to be at 4 meetings a week, 2 where I am so I can see and talk to you. And one of them has to be a book study. And I'm so grateful for that advice. I love book studies. You know, Tom helped me understand what alcoholism is and, you know, what the nature of the disease and what it does and how cunning, baffle, and powerful, and he also said insidious. You know? And I'm grateful to be in book studies. I love book studies because that's where the plan and program of recovery is today. Tom became my sponsor. We started working the steps. He got me involved. And Tom was a give-it-back person. I wanted to be in his back pocket. You know, Tom was real active in the district and active in the state. And I believe he was a delegate to the General Service Conference. And I watched him. I not only listened to him, but I watched him. We worked the steps. And he got me into the traditions. He got me into service work. I got a home group, same home group that he had. It's my home group today. And we do our best, like I said, to do the fit tradition as best we can. You know, I opened that meeting up for 2.5 years. You know, didn't do much for the spirit of rotation, but it did an awful lot for me. You know, I got the opportunity to stand by that door and stick my hand out and see people come in there that was hopeless like me, had that chaotic look on their face and that anxiety and their fear and their shaking. And I could get them aside and get them over there and show them a meeting list and get them a cup of coffee and shake their hand and say, look, I was once like you. And share with them what my sponsor shared with me. If you do these things, life will get better in spite of you. Life will get better in spite of you. And I'm so grateful for that. And after 2.5 years, I was able to go to work for Tom. I'm in a Monday night meeting, book study, on a Monday night. And Tom comes up to me. See, I'm still working for Don at $7 an hour after leaving and being a manager of a high-profile retail furniture store. I'm making minimum wage. And Tom comes up to me and says, Buster, my family and I have a conversation. We'd like for you to go to work for us. I said, Tom, I don't have a driver's license. He said, don't worry about it. I've talked to my family. My youngest son is going to pick you up in Suffolk, take you to Smithfield, and bring you home at night. Tears came to my eyes. I went in the bathroom, got on my knees, and thanked God. You know, I loved him. I went to work for Tom. I immediately started climbing out of debt. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had 2.5 pages of bills, banks, finance companies, lawyers. I mean, it had built up, you know. After 3.5 years, I was able to petition the court and get my driver's license back. At 3.5 years, I started sponsoring people. At 3.5 years, I was put on the planning board for the Oceanfront Conference, which I'm so grateful for. I'm on a 12-step list. I'm involved in my home group still, GSR. Been involved with I became corrections chair for the intergroup for 2 terms. GSR. Eventually became co-chairman of the intergroup with Steve when he was the chairman. After seven years, I was able to climb out of debt. Took me 7 years. See, my mother was giving me her Social Security check to keep me from going bankrupt. And my aunt knew it, my mother's sister, and she lent me a large amount of money. And for 7 years, I paid her back most of my check every month and climbed out of debt in seven years. And I was able not to make amends to my mother, not only but verbally, but also to take care of her and to pay her back. Yeah. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsor people, and they do more for me than I ever do for them. Yeah. You know, when I'm asked to do something, I respect the responsibility statement. Yeah. You know, when anyone in work reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there, and for that I am responsible. It doesn't say you are, or we are. It says I am responsible, and I take that very serious. I've gone to Richmond to stand before parole boards for people who I sponsor who are in prison. I've gone to Richmond to stand before health review board poor guy that I sponsored who was a doctor who was ready to lose his medical license, and I stood before that committee and I told the truth, tried to be as anonymous as I could, and first thing the lady asked me on the committee was, when is he going to do his fifth step? And I, because I knew it was public record, I won't go say anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I understand you're a sponsor. When he's going to do his fourth and fifth step? Yes, ma'am. You know, and we talked. I recently stood before a military review board for a young man who's in the military who was trying to get his life back on track. And I'm grateful I had the opportunity to do that. When I'm asked, I try to do it. One of the commanding officers told him afterwards, he said, he almost made me quit drinking. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's done so much for me, and it's allowed me to rebuild my life and my family. You know, my brother died from an asthma attack downtown. I got the call about that, you know, when I was at work. And the thought of taking a drink didn't cross my mind. But the thought of calling my sponsor did, and I did. And I called my sponsor, and I talked to him about what was going on, and he helped me get myself together so that I could be of service to my family, to help them get through it. You know, I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. Y'all have done so much for me. You know, I was able to make my amends. And I carry a list in my pocket. It's been there since I did my eighth and ninth step. And I've checked them off, and I got a few more that I need to check off. You know. But when God makes the opportunity, and I'm willing, whenever it's available to me, I'm going to do it. I guarantee you that, because I know this works. Give me an opportunity to straighten my life out and straighten my, you know, I was always great with mumbling apologies. You know, I'm not going to do this anymore. Yeah. But now I'm able to do the kind of things with my family. You know, my mother was very ill last years of her life. Very ill. Yeah. And I was able to take care of her. She had dementia, she had Crohn's disease, she had leukemia. She was a very sick person. And we made a decision, my family and I did, my sister and my nieces and nephew, all of us, we made a decision to keep her at home, not put her in a nursing home. And like I say, she was very sick. And every night, I sit beside her hospital bed and I look at her. And I would talk to her and tell her, you know, about the family. And because she had dementia, and a lot of times she would forget 2 minutes later what I'm talking to her about. But every night I would tell her how much she was loved. Yeah, I'd sit there and I'd tell her, Mama, Nancy loves you. I love you. And I'd name her grandchildren. And she loved Taylor. He was the only boy, you know. And I'd try to talk like him. And she would laugh. And every night I did that. And she knew she was loved. She knew she was loved. You know, and I spent the night with her at the hospital. It was getting close to the end. And then the next night, I didn't. I was at home. I got up the next morning. My brother-in-law knocked on the door. And he said, come on. He said, your mother is gone. The thought of taking a drink didn't cross my mind. The thought of calling my sponsor did. And I called my sponsor. And I talked with him. And he helped me get myself together so I could be of service to my family and to help them. I get dressed, I get in the car. As soon as I get in the car, I get a call from one of the guys I sponsored. Frank had already got the word out, and Steve, we call him Razzle Dazzle, called me. Wanted to know if there was anything he could do. Offered his condolences. I said, no, thank you for calling. I get to the hospital. I go to the hospital door, front door, and Steve S. over there was standing at the door. He hugged me, told me he loved me, and walked me to my mother's room. I get in the room, I start saying goodbyes to Mom. You know, the nurse is there, the caretaker is there. I hear the door, I turn around, my sponsor comes in. I keep on talking to Mama before they come get her. I hear the door open again, and I turn around, Arthur's there. Door opens again, Ken is there. The room starts filling up with AA people. You know, they come get Mama, take her away. We go downstairs into the chapel. We have an AA meeting. Now, I can't explain the love, hope, and support that's in Alcoholics Anonymous no better than that. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do love Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what? It was so it was such a privilege to be able to take care of her. We'd be sitting there one night and she'd go into one of those times when her mind was really out there, you know. And I said, she's going to get up and go find her children. I said, Mom, you can't walk. Sit down. Please be still. And things were getting real uptight. And the phone would ring. And I'd answer the phone. And it would be somebody like Steve. I said, Mama, it's Steve. Steve, hey, honey. Because she was used to talking to Steve. She was used to talking to the people I sponsored. They'd call the home. She would answer. She was like an AA secretary before she got really ill. I come home from a meeting. She said, Buster, did you call Steve? I said, which one, Mama? There are three of them. She said, Steve S. You know, she was wonderful. But I had the opportunity to do that because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I tell you, when I was drinking, my mother took care of us, and she would cook. We'd live side by side, my sister and her children and husband, and they'd come over for dinner at night, and they'd come over, and I'd hear their little feet tippy-toeing across the floor, Chelsea and Sarah, and they'd come push their Uncle Buster's bedroom door open, and I'd be laying across the bed drunk, you know, and they'd start crying. They didn't know what was wrong with Uncle Buster. Yeah. And when I finally got sober, Chelsea came up to me, the oldest. She said, Uncle Buster, we're glad you're not shaking and you're not sick anymore. Yeah. She just had a baby. That's been some time ago. She just had a baby. And she came all the way from Raleigh, North Carolina to see me, her Uncle Buster. Wouldn't call him on the phone and tell him. She came all the way from Raleigh, North Carolina, to sit down beside me to tell me that she was pregnant, you know. And Sarah, the middle niece, got married. She was the first one to get married. It was a couple years ago, and I always go to see my sister. I always hug her. I always tell her I love her every night, you know. And she was home. And she was sitting there with a computer, and she was pulling up stuff on the computer. She said, Uncle Buster, come here. This is what you and I are going to dance to at my wedding. And then I went over and stood beside her, and she pulled it up on the computer. It was Louis Armstrong singing, What a Wonderful World. I said, Sugar, what made you pick that? She said, because it reminds me of you, Uncle Buster. It reminds me of you. You know, I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I'm going to read a couple of things tonight, but I'll read this first, because I was going through some things last night, and I won't look at this, but it just happened to be there. My youngest niece was born right after I got sober, and she'd forgotten my birthday. So she sent me a gift, and if you bear with me, I'm going to read this. She'd forgotten it, and she always called her sweetheart, and I'd kiss her on the cheek, and I'd say, can I bite your ear? And she said, no. And then I bite it anyhow. Anyhow, she was born right after I got sober. And I used to hold her in my arms and walk up down the hallway so she went to sleep. And then she loves me. I know that. All of them love me. She says, I know that a little gift can't make up for it or match how much you have done and been for me over the short span of time. That is my life. But I hope this can be a start. I love you, Uncle Buster. I don't know if you or I will ever be able to fully realize how much you've affected the course of my life and character. You've always been a shining example of how to be generous, to be selfless, and to love others as Christ does. The way you look past my and others' faults to love them is something that has always struck my heart. You don't make a big show of it, but instead stand quietly by, bringing no attention to yourself, which speaks of a humility that in a thousand lifetimes I don't think I could ever emulate. You inspire me to be something greater than myself. In the act of making oneself smaller and letting God become larger in you, to show those you encounter just how much He loves them. You were always patient and soft-spoken when my attitude deserved the exact opposite. I'm sorry I made it so hard and truly regret my past. I love you, Uncle Buster. I'm still your sweetheart forever and ever. I promise. And I did that because, you know, I ran across it last night, but it tells what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It's allowed me to be a part of my family today. It's allowed me to make the amends to the people I needed to make amends to. But more importantly, Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to do something like this tonight, to share with people that, you know, there's hope in these rooms, and I found the hope here, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous is an island of sand in the world gone mad, my sponsor used to say. You know, today's been a pretty good day. There have been some days that here recently that have been a little tough, but life is good today, even when it's difficult. And I've got something in my back pocket that Jack Carr gave me at a roundup down in Carolina some years ago. It says, my purpose is to prepare myself to be a maximum service to God and those about me. I see it every time I pull the credit card out. In my wallet, I've got my medallion. It says, to thine own self be true, because I lie to me before I lie to you. And y'all help me to keep me honest on a day-by-day basis. And I also have something in my left pocket that's been in my pocket for years. You know, because it helps me remember who's in charge. And if you don't mind, this is the last thing I'm going to read, I promise. But I pull it out and read it when there's a difficult day at work or things are not going the way that I think they should. I ask God to help me understand and to do the things that y'all have taught me to do, to accept and to love. And remember that love and tolerance is our code. And I also remember who's in charge. It said, people are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you're kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you're honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. Thank y'all very much.
Oh my gosh, that was such a powerful message. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. At this time, we will pass the seventh tradition basket. In accordance with the seventh tradition, which states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, while contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. It's important that the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all of us and with groups around the world. So at this time, are there any AA-related announcements you want to share with the group?
Yes, go ahead.
My name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic. The Virginia State Conference of Young People in AA is coming up July 1st through 3rd. The discount that we have on the hotel is $100 a night, and you have until tomorrow to just make that reservation. So please reserve your hotel rooms. Registration's $30 now, $40 at the door. So please come out. It's going to be out in Charlottesville, Virginia at the Holiday Inn. If you need any more information, talk to me after the meeting.
All right. See Carla if you need information. Thanks. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Ashton. I'm starting July 9th.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is JT. I'm an alcoholic. I'm home for 2:13 book meeting. He's having dinner and a speaker next week, starting at 7. So if you're a member, it's a blessing. However,
awesome. Awesome, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, yes, sir. See him after the meeting if you'd like more detail. Okay, I've got him and then Ryan. Yes, sir.
I'm Ryan for the call. I'm here with Ken. This is our 36th anniversary meeting. Tuesday, June 22nd. The food starts at 6:30. We've got this wonderful speaker from Virginia Beach, Reggie D, at 8 o'clock. We'd like to have all you guys out here to serve our staff if you wish. The food we will provide.
Thank you.
June 25th, A101, Norfolk Cafeteria, brunch, 10 o'clock, bacon, Linda T, 11, Duggins. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping that brief. Okay, so, yes, sir. To get to hear our delegate share their experience at GSO and all the important stuff going on. And yes, sir.
I'm Andrew. I'm an alcoholic. Waverly Action Group is celebrating our 6-year anniversary on June the 25th. It's going to be from 5 to 6. We're going to have spaghetti dinner. And from 6 to 7, we're going to have a speaker, John M. from Chesapeake, to be our speaker.
Awesome. Thank you. 203 East Main Street. Thank you. Thank you very much for sharing. So there's a lot of AA events going on. That's important. Simple Actions Group is a home group, so I'd just like to ask all the home group members to raise your hand. And if you'd like to find out more about joining, please see one of us after the meeting. And newcomers, you guys are really probably literally the most important people here. So we really like the opportunity to get to know you by giving us your first name. Is anyone here that's in their first 30 days that would like to introduce themselves?
Hey, Chris.
Welcome. Glad you're here. Yes, ma'am. Hey, Melissa. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Okay, there's some literature over on this table over here. There are some newcomer packets, so be sure, if you're a newcomer, make sure you get one. If you want to get an AA book, they're just sold at cost. Just see one of the home group members after the meeting. Sponsorship is really important. It's yours for the asking, so we urge you, do not delay. If anyone here is willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And if you don't have a sponsor, we've got a lot of choices here. So please, if you have any questions, you can see one of those people raise your hand, or I'll stick up here after the meeting and answer any questions. We've got some pamphlets for you, whatever. Okay, I would really like to thank Buster again for coming out here. Okay, we're going to go ahead and close tonight's meeting with the Lord's Prayer, so if everyone can try to form a circle.
Wait till you're old.
Good to see you. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're gonna need a stretch on our circle.
It's a pretty good circle. 1,220 feet.
Wow.
David, would you like to take us out?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation,